humans haven't figured out yet how to move something at the speed of light. The closest we've ever gotten is in what's called a particle accelerator. The most powerful one today is in Europe. It's called the Large Hadron Collider. The previous record holder was in this country, in a prairie 35 miles west of Chicago, at the Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory, or Fermilab. The accelerator was called the Tevatron, but in 2011 it was shut down, and Fermilab shifted its focus to a tiny particle that could help answer some of the biggest questions in physics, a particle called the neutrino.
Wolfgang Pauli said that they are almost impossible to detect. They are, but thankfully we've become very good at it.
That's Bonnie Fleming, Fermilab's deputy chief research officer. She says neutrinos have no electrical charge and almost no mass, but they're everywhere.
I know this is radio, but let's all hold out our hands and count to three. One, two, three. 3 trillion neutrinos just passed through my hand. So an enormous number of neutrinos from all sorts of different sources all over the universe. There are some left over from the Big Bang. They're produced in stars, in supernova, in nuclear reactors, in the highest cosmic accelerators in the universe, and in particle accelerators here on Earth.
And what difference do they make?
That's a good question, and that's one thing that we're trying to figure out. They're second in abundance only to the photon in the universe. So the fact that 3 trillion pass through your hand is really important, because even though they're very small, that's the eno part of neutrino, they are so abundant that they can affect the fabric of the cosmos. What they're going to tell us about the cosmos, we're still learning. That they have mass is something that we only learned on the order of 20 years ago. And that's a very fundamental property of any particle, in particular the building block elementary particles of the universe. And once we understood that, it opened up a host of new questions, in particular the one that Dune will answer, which is, do neutrinos act the same as antineutrinos and therefore can explain our matter-dominated universe? Put simply, are neutrinos the reason we exist?
DUNE stands for Deep Underground Neutrino Experiment. It has to be deep underground because when you're beaming particles across America, you don't want your detectors to get confused by cosmic rays at the surface. That's why to see another underground neutrino experiment at Fermilab called NOVA, we had to take an elevator into a subterranean tunnel.
So this is the main elevator here. We just press down, and we'll start going down. It's a comfortable ride, but moves rather slowly. We only have to go 300 feet.
We left our IDs up top in case we get stuck so people will know where we are. And we had to get trained to use emergency breathing devices just in case. At the bottom, we find a cavernous tunnel with water trickling down the sides of rock walls. There are rows of computers and a semi-truck-sized box of acrylic bars filled with a special oil that measures the path of charged particles affected by the neutrinos passing through. From this tunnel, neutrinos are being beamed to a detector in Minnesota.
When will this experiment be done, or will it ever be done?
The NOVA experiment's been running for a number of years, since 2014. And has several more years of data taking. The DUNE experiment is under construction, and NOVA will finish running around the same time scale that DUNE will start up. And DUNE will run for decades.
Really?
Producing results along the way. First set of results after a certain number of years for the beam physics part of the experiment. DUNE will also look for neutrino sources from all parts of the cosmos to learn about neutrinos and to learn about the cosmos, to look for neutrinos from supernova when stars explode, and what they can tell us again about the neutrinos and about supernova. And that, I think, will go on for a long time.
Would you say that this research is sort of in the same category as our space exploration?
You are looking into the farthest reaches of the universe through the eye of a neutrino interaction and the neutrinos that come from all of those different parts of the universe. And in that sense, absolutely, you're looking back in time and using the neutrinos to be able to do that.
Up we go.
One thing you can tell at Fermilab is that this kind of research doesn't come cheap. There are 4,000 scientists here, 1,000 working on Dune, which will use 70,000 tons of liquid argon. The detectors have to be kept at a temperature of minus 300 degrees Fahrenheit. The Dune project alone will cost around $1 billion in all. So why pay such a price for this research?
To first order, understanding what we're made of and where we came from. What we do in particle physics is break things down to the tiniest building blocks of matter, and we see this beautiful symmetries that are 12 building blocks of matter that make up all of what we see. So what's the main focus of the Dune experiment? Trying to understand if neutrinos can explain some asymmetry that happened in the early universe, which left us with a matter-dominated universe, which is why we exist. And fundamentally, that's a really fascinating and interesting question. It requires big experiments in big science to be able to answer, but knowing the answer to it tells us something about how the universe was created, how everything we see was created, and that's fantastic.
Scientists, engineers, and technicians are already working on the electronics, hardware, and computer programs for the gigantic particle detectors of Dune.
Their work creates... The head of Fermilab is a man named Nigel Lockyer. He's above ground in an office with a whiteboard full of complex mathematical equations. I asked him what questions Fermilab's researchers are answering. He said, why anything?
Yeah, why anything? Why anything exists? Where's it come from? As you start thinking about it, our world, your world that we see every day requires just two quarks, yet scientists have found six. And so what does that mean in terms of the original plan or how it plays out? Have we found all we need to find, or will be there'll be other things? I suspect we're scratching the surface on everything we know. We tend to think we're smart, but my favorite example is, can you teach quantum theory to a dog? And the dog would just look at you like, what are you talking about? We may be the dog in this case, but we think we know a fair amount.
Now, Fermilab used to be famous for the Tevatron, mm-hmm. which was a particle accelerator that closed in 2011. Mm-hmm. Was that because of budget reasons that it did that?
No. The Tevatron was the highest energy collider in the world mm-hmm. for about 25 years. It had taken over from CERN, who had had the previous highest
in
energy.
In Switzerland,
the highest energy collider. And now the baton has been passed on to CERN again because they built yet another machine. And Fermilab has gone off in a new direction, which is the highest intensity beams.
But you've still got this big collider sitting right here on the campus, right?
It's sitting there underground, yeah, enjoying itself, I guess. But we think the science of the neutrino has a very clear direction to it with the technology we're using, the 70,000 tons of liquid argon. We should be able to observe whether that exploding star forms a neutron star or not. And we would also be able to see whether a black hole forms. And that would be real-time observation of that type of thing. So the experiment we're pursuing is not only understand the neutrino, but it's understand the role that the neutrino plays in the cosmos.
How difficult is it to explain to, let's say, the lawmakers that have to fund this place, mm-hmm. the importance of the work that you're doing here?
Well, there's usually two types of lawmakers. There's the lawmaker that loves science and wants to ask the same questions that we ask, and we have the appropriate conversation with them. And then there's the lawmakers who say, well, what good is this? What's it for? You know, how does it help society? So then I usually refer to a couple of accomplishments of the field. My first one I usually talk about is cancer therapy, which is something that we now modern hospitals or countries use protons, not just x-rays, for cancer therapy. And the seminal paper on using protons for cancer therapy was written by the first director of Fermilab in 1947. You mentioned the Tevatron. It was the first large superconducting accelerator in the world. We had to develop the superconductor itself in order to do that. Well, that same technology, same cable, let me say it that way, is used in every MRI in the world now. And so we had we've had an indirect huge impact on medical physics. Fermilab built the first small accelerator to treat cancer that was put in a hospital in Loma Linda, California, many years ago. That was which is still treating thousands of patients per year. So it's, you know, we've done a number of things. It's not our main focus, but we have an impact nevertheless. And other parts of our field, as you know, perhaps CERN invented the World Wide Web. So I would have said, isn't that enough? But, you know, of course, everybody expects you to do something new. We're a laboratory that builds things, as you could probably see when you look at it. And we build things at the edge of what's possible.
Not far from Nigel Lockyer's office, there's a small herd of bison maintained by the lab since the 1960s to strengthen the lab's connection to its home in the prairie. Fermilab insists the bison don't glow in the dark, and they seem to be okay with the neutrinos, the trillions passing through them, me, and you as I speak. You can see photos from our trip to Fermilab at hereandnow.org.